Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the PMP Weekly episode 119. Always need to double check what was the episode. It is 22nd of March 2021. We have still snow in Helsinki, which is actually pretty mind-blowing. We have plenty of snow, but I think it's melting fast away. So pretty soon we can get, or at least I'm waiting eagerly to get to the paddleboarding and a roller plating, but that's my life.
There is still a chance for you to swap that for a snowboard.
Potentially, yes. Potentially. That is actually true. No. Summer is much better. Now, in the PMP Weekly, I always talk about the latest on Microsoft 365 platform and features and capabilities. And typically, we do have a visitor before we go there. My name is Sasa Juvonen. I'm a program manager in the Microsoft 365 platform ecosystem area. And with me as a co-host is Waldek.
Hi, everybody. My name is Waldek Masega. I'm cloud developer advocate at Microsoft 365. Yes. And as Vesa said, today with us, we have a guest from the UK. I don't know whether it's sunny or snowy or cold. So it seems like a little bit of snow, or is it light?
It's actually not raining, which is something. Here in London, it's kind of nice and sunny, maybe 14 degrees, something like that.
Cool. Excellent.
That's a spring.
Excellent. So spring from the UK, a longtime MVP, Mr. Chris O'Brien. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, guys. Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We were just chatting before we started that the last time we chatted actually was when you were a visitor in this this show, because I think there has been cancellations of MVP summits and all of that stuff,
and events,
no proper conferences,
travel,
no events, no nothing. So it's been well, actually. So
it has, but, and I'm missing all that. I don't know about you guys, but I do miss the face-to-face contact, the beers, the Stroop waffles, everything else, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Not too much, but in a certain level, so I'm not coming back on. At some point, I think I was traveling 26 or 28 weeks in a year, and that's not fun anymore. But but every now and then doing that. And now, Chris, you were actually a visitor, I can't remember which episode, but can you kind of recap, who are you, what are you doing nowadays? Because there was actually a role change for you as well.
That's right. So historically, I've led development teams and very involved in the Microsoft stack. I guess I started out with Content Management Server 2001, came up through Content Management and ECM and SharePoint 2007. And for 7 or 8 years, I led the development team at a company called Content & Code here in the UK. In the last year and a half, I had a role change. The company changed. We grew. We merged with other companies. We're now Content & Cloud. I'm the Products and Services Director, which means I have a group of about 30 people looking after different areas, modern workplace, Azure, cybersecurity compliance. I have some product directors that are hugely talented, experienced people that are basically innovators driving us forward. I also look after a couple of other teams, our digital workplace product on Office 365, also a ServiceNow team, so a whole new area for me to get involved in, which is non-Microsoft, which has been fascinating. And another team that we sort of do some Office 365 service owner services from.
Cool. Wow, that is a lot.
Yeah,
it's a busy period, yes, and quite a few things to get to grips with. Especially, having a deep background with Microsoft and understanding, the evolution of the cloud and getting into Microsoft 365 and Azure, but also looking in a parallel world over in ServiceNow and just seeing where that world is up to, some of the things that are the same, some of the things that are done differently, and running a team of devs that focus on that.
Let's jump on actually on the role change and your historical. You come from a technical background, like I said, and you've been MVP for like how many years? Many years.
20 years.
28
years. No, SharePoint. 15, 14 years.
50 years experience on SharePoint.
Yes.
Yeah, 25 years experience on SharePoint. Yes. The SharePoint 2020 birthday is coming on next Saturday, but I have 25 years of experience on SharePoint. I think Jeff is the only one who can say that. Anyway, so what was the big change within your role perspective? So how did you dealt with that change? You come from a technical background, and I've actually struggled with this change as well, because more and more as a program manager, you just don't have time to be highly technical. But any tips or, let's say, learnings related on letting it go? Because at some point, there's just too many things to juggle.
That's right. And, the shift to sort of being technical, even sort of in a senior technical role where you're leading a team and not necessarily writing every last line of code yourself or contributing every last solution element. Just the shift to being in senior leadership is very interesting. And where the senior managers were doing in your company, you know, I think I've been working harder than I've ever worked. And even though you didn't quite imagine what was in those roles, you probably knew that they were busy, and all of that gets confirmed. I think, if anything, just trying to smooth out the transition and not just do it all as a sort of drop off the cliff. Unfortunately, I was able to do that in the recent years of my sort of head of development role. It was becoming wide ranging. I was doing lots of things, going out, meeting lots of clients, sort of presenting the value of technologies, having CTO, CIO conversations, and probably that smoothed the way. But I think to go from one to the other very directly would be very, very difficult.
Yeah. And a thing that I went through a similar change a while back too. And the one thing that I found hard was like to look back at the end of the day and tell me, like, was it a good day or not? Because in the past, like being a dev, like you can see the commits, the code you wrote. Being a non dev, you're like, okay, so I had meetings. Is that it? Like, was it a productive day or not? So I wonder, like, how do you perceive that?
You're absolutely right. So what I have is a framework where there are five sort of pillars of my group and the value that we provide to the business. And all of the activities, all of the meetings, I basically have a planner board so that all of the activities, they're rolling up to one of those things. And when I go to add something to the board, if it doesn't immediately roll up to something, that's kind of an alarm bell that tells you, hey, is this a high priority, high value activity or not? And, you know, that, I use a framework like that to help me. But otherwise, yeah, absolutely. Unless you're taking a step back every week or every month and saying, what did I really drive forward? What did I change? Then it's not as obvious.
Yeah.
As a developer, it's so much more easier to say and have a look on, I did that and that and that and that blog post, technical things and all of that stuff, rather than influencing on countless of things. It's not as concrete for sure.
Now, well, and also maybe another thing to that, right? Like when you build things, like you get in a way to a tangible thing, like you get to ship stuff. Whereas being a manager, like you might have meetings and influencing things typically takes time. So at the end of the day, like after a week, you might feel like, hey, I pushed these 10 things an inch forward.
That's exactly it.
Nothing done, right?
Yeah. But hey, you know, what you've got to sort of frame is that you're changing the position of something dramatically, you know, and even though it just takes small increments of progress to do that, to actually shift the position in sort of a month, 3 months, 6 months, whatever it is, and take the company from A to B, you know, that's it is satisfying when you realize that's what's actually happening.
Yeah.
What about related on that change? And obviously, the last year has been pretty traumatic in any way. But would you have any, let's say, tips to share for anybody who's watching or listening related on work-life balance with all of this stuff?
So it has been challenging for everybody, I think. And certainly interesting seeing the tech evolve and some of the features coming to Teams that support that, you know, virtual commute, some of the stuff in Viva Insights about how, you know, perhaps integrating with well-being things, Headspace, Glint, things like that. And I think it can look different depending on your role. But I think guarding the focus time is something that's really important. And if you're just going from call to call, meeting to meeting, and you're allowing it to sort of stretch into evenings and weekends, and you're not sort of putting up some boundaries, then I think, you know, you will find it difficult to feel like you've got balance. I'm reading Deep Work at the moment, the Cal Newport book, and also read some of his other books. And I think having those periods of sustained focus is important, even for managers, even for very senior people. And I think it's that and the combination of some boundaries around the edges, that's what you've just, it's down to everybody's, it's an individual responsibility as much as a company responsibility.
Yeah. And at this level anyway, or especially in your level anyway, it's not like you can never get your job done. It's just an endless to-do list. It's just the to-do list just keeps on kind of growing and growing and growing. So you really need to deal with, okay, I will do these things today, maybe some extra, and that's it. And if you can't get to those let's say, to 3 or 5 items, whatever is your process, it's fine. It's okay.
Yeah.
Let's
tomorrow's
try to do
another
it tomorrow
day,
again.
Huh?
Exactly. So
all about prioritization, isn't it? Because you're right. Exactly. You'll never get to the end of that task list.
Exactly.
Well, but I guess it is an interesting point, right? Because over the course of years, like, there was this big hype about getting things done, like getting to inbox zero, trying to clear all to-dos. And for me, the eye-opening time about it was when I was switching roles and I went from working on projects to products. And products are, like, never finished. Like, you can always improve stuff. There's always new ideas. There's always developments. There are new things that you can do, right? So as such, like, you are never done, and just keep adding to the list. And if all you are used to is a clear to-do list, like clearing things, you get stressed a lot.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So it's about adapting the mindset, isn't it? But I think for me in my role, I think the idea of being done or having an inbox zero probably isn't going to work in the way that things are at the moment. So it's about finding a model that does work and not
exactly
allowing yourself to be prescribed to by somebody else's model if it doesn't fit.
True, true. And the more senior you are, the more, let's say, self-responsible you are on the actions as well. It's not like anybody comes to you and you have these things to do today, make it happen. And well, I haven't had that luxury for a decade maybe anymore. Yeah. So it's our own.
Every day I'm saying, like, hey, I need you to do this. Like, there's a bug you need to fix. And, like, you're never doing it.
Now you know why, Walden.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like,
sorry, you're not high on the priority list, so it's okay. You know, priorities. You know how it is.
Now you know where you stand, at least, Walden.
Exactly. Exactly. Today I learned where I stand.
Now, something about what we always talk about with our partners related to Microsoft 365 is that, how do you see, Chris, the transition from, let's say, a classic, or as we used to be, you came from a SharePoint world as well, and it's been wonderful to see then that the SharePoint ecosystem community is now kind of getting this kind of a shred around the old Microsoft 365 like it should be, and learning the right ways of sharing and all of that stuff. But how do you see the partner opportunities within the cloud? Is it actually this classic discussion which we've been having for years? Is it actually reducing the partner revenue opportunities and the scale, or is it actually giving more opportunities when we're transitioning into the cloud?
I think the biggest factor is probably the agility of the partner. You know, the ability to shift as the technology shifts, the ability to translate what the technology provides into value for the clients. And if organizations aren't able to do that at pace, they may well see their revenue shrink, and they at least feel that that's what's happening in the world. But I think for other partners that are able to keep ahead of Microsoft and innovate very rapidly, then actually the revenue is only increasing, but the opportunities are increasing. And that's, I guess, what was interesting about my company and this sort of function in the group that was created. It was a products and services function just designed solely to keep the group innovating and make sure that we're introducing new services, that we're thinking about new opportunities with the cloud tech, new products that we might sell on to our clients. And that was our sole purpose. That's really what we focus on. And organizations that have that in their DNA, you know, I think you'll always find that there are huge opportunities, even with the pace of change.
Yeah. How do you then actually deal, or how is your organization dealing with the change? Any tips what you can share? Obviously, you have your own ways of, maybe it's confidential, I don't know. But again, some learnings related on what others could learn, how to deal with, how to keep up with the innovation, what Microsoft is all the time, every single week there's something new.
Yeah.
How can you find your niche or your big opportunity?
So maybe it's a little bit different for us because, you know, my group is entirely focused on that. So I have 3 or 4 very talented product directors. These are guys that have run their own companies, been around IT for 20 and 30 years. I have a product director for Modern Workplace, one for Azure, one for Security and Compliance. And, you know, their whole focus is understanding how to pivot our company almost on a week by week, month by month basis, but also guide our clients as they're trying to understand things. And so because we're putting this energy and this investment into it, it becomes easy for us to sort of map out the backlog of actually what's needed. And we essentially offer this to clients as well. So almost like a Microsoft 365 service owner service, which helps you understand the changes coming in the roadmap. We take a particular look at your tenant, your message center, starting to understand what comms you need to build, what your posture needs to be to this change. But ultimately, regardless of your organization type, you do need to face in that direction and be able to understand the change that's coming to understand how you should best respond to it.
Yeah. What's actually the transition related on that? That's actually a good example of a role or an offering which obviously didn't exist when we were still in on-prem and the innovation speed wasn't that fast. But how much, just out of curiosity, and can you kind of estimate how much of the work has transitioned from a purely technical role to be more a consulting and these kind of roles for customers? So taking things into account, because change management is certainly one of the big challenges what customers are having, given the speed of innovation, what's happening.
Yeah, well, I think as you're saying, so many things have transitioned and changed shape over the years, where we started out perhaps just with a very development-focused approach, and we'd have sort of very big development projects with huge teams and big agile processes. And now, you know, maybe some of the things come to us through the platform, and really what we're doing is understanding how to make best use of the platform, how to respond to the changes, how to make sure that our sort of governance around this change is in place. So roles have changed. And I think it depends on what the focus is. If you're very focused on apps and solutions, you'll always be still somewhat in the development space. If you're really focused on how do I provide these services to my business, how do I make sure they're getting the value from these technologies, then you might more focus on the platform and the change and all of your processes and communications around it. So, you know, I think it varies, but it's certainly true to say that the shape of things has changed dramatically and will only continue to do so.
Yeah.
Well, so maybe a related thing to that is, like, every week there is something new, right? And like there is one group that always tries to, hey, there is a new feature, we need to adopt it. Whereas there's also another extreme that's like, no, like we have our plans. Sure, maybe there is something new, but we don't care about it. Like, how easy do you find to explain the value of the new things that are available to customers for them to be able to choose whether they need it now, need it later, or if it doesn't apply to them at all?
I think a good baseline is to think that really organizations that have ambition, that feel that they can be agile, that they feel that they can provide the highest value tools to their business as early as possible, these are likely to be the organizations that succeed, because that's where sort of efficiency, competitive advantage comes from. But if you're constantly holding things back because, you know, you're worried about the impact from users, or you feel that everything needs to launch or be landed in the organization in a perfect way, then you're paying a price for that. You're less agile, you're less flexible. People don't have all of the tools they need to be as effective as they can be. So a good baseline is to be ambitious, I think, in this space, and only climb down from that if you sort of have identified tangible reasons why putting this out early, perhaps with less comms than you might like, you know, but only do that when there are tangible reasons not to. And we help our clients all the time with these conversations. But, you know, we have organizations where in the Power Platform world, a great example is some organizations that sort of assign the licenses, make the service live. People within their businesses are creating Power Apps, they're creating Power Automate solutions. And then they start to think, okay, so we need to probably apply some governance to this and start to pay more attention to what people are building. And then we have other organizations who are like, we are not assigning licenses at all. We're going to have a Power Platform driving license. And only when you've gone through our training, you've sort of demonstrated a certain level of capability, only then will we sort of mark you in a database with a flag, and we'll think about assigning you a license. And, yeah, you know, very interesting to see different sort of approaches to it. Certainly in highly regulated industries, maybe energy, finance, insurance, some of this is appropriate. But otherwise, we try and steer our clients to be more ambitious and fluid. And, you know, Sometimes you can't apply the governance at the last minute. You need to plan for it, but you don't need everything in place on day one. This can be a journey.
Yeah,
but I think maybe, again, maybe
Sorry, quickly on that one. There's no really right or wrong, right? Because the maturity level of the company also dictates what is the right thing to move forward. But certainly a recommendation. Right. Sorry, Valdek.
And I guess maybe in a way it also comes down to trying to understand the risk, right? Like if I let people use this without additional or without covering all comms, what is the potential risk they could do to us with that? Can they leak stuff or not? And I guess maybe also there is a lot for everybody to win, like trying to make it easier for everybody to understand, like what is the risk involved with this new tag that is now available?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it does look different in different spaces, depending on what the compliance needs are, depending on what the industry. But as I say, look, a good default is to start to think, you know, we want to release this. We want to release it early and get the value to our business. What are the reasons why we shouldn't? And sometimes you can face some of this off with some simple comms and sort of management of the change. And one of the big gaps that most organizations have is that they just don't have policies or anything communicated around this stuff. So when people create power apps and then get into trouble, you know, people sometimes phone the help desk, the support desk. They expect some support because it's just an application that they use. And, you know, organizations can run into trouble with this stuff, but at the same time, there are simple solutions just around publishing things. So it's pretty clear what the expectations are and that these aren't necessarily IT-supported apps, but hopefully they provide some value and the owner can lead the responsibility for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, looking under the time, I just want to make sure that we actually address this section as well. So how do you see the, let's say, the focus areas within the industry right now? We talked about the machine learning, artificial intelligence. You're seeing a more and more demand on that one. Is that a growth area clearly where people should be focusing on? What's your take on that?
I think so. So a couple of the big areas that I've been focusing on recently are AI and automation. So, you know, we see lots of the solutions that we build leaning on these areas more heavily. And I think this is where big opportunities lie for organizations to just transform the tools that they provide to their people. And we see this in a few places. So perhaps we're building power platform solutions that use more and more AI, maybe plugging into Azure Cognitive Services for image recognition, maybe sort of speech to text or text to speech or some of the services that help you, I guess, process large amounts of information. And what's interesting is some of the different ways this can be done within the Microsoft stack. So lots of overlap perhaps between Power Platform AI approaches, things like Viva Topics, things like SharePoint Syntex. These are all areas that I've been spending time in. Syntex, especially, you know, working with a couple of clients on this at the moment as they start to work out how to make some of their key processes more efficient, where documents are at the heart of it. It's large volumes of information. Perhaps, you know, they receive 20 or 30 large documents from a client that somebody has to parse and quickly understand, you know, what this opportunity is. Maybe it's an RFP or something like that, and how technologies like Syntex can accelerate those processes.
Yeah. Is it actually catching up on the customer area, or are they kind of understanding the value out of those things?
So I think some of the answers aren't immediately obvious, and that's where perhaps partners or sort of technologists can help out, because the technology in places like Syntex at the moment, it can be a little bit mechanical. So if you think about what Syntex primarily does, it's throw some documents at it. It can identify the type of documents they are. So it can do classification. Is this a statement of work, a proposal, a contract, an invoice, a purchase order? It can identify those things. But it can also extract information. So we do the machine teaching. We teach it how to understand our documents. The example I always use is that if you see an invoice and somebody asks you to find the total of the invoice, your brain and your eyes will know to find some kind of table in that document, probably to scan to the bottom of it. You'll look for a word like total. You'll move right, and then there'll be some kind of currency amount, and then you'll know intuitively that that's the total invoice value. So yeah, we train Syntex about these documents and how to understand them, reasonable amount of flexibility in the rules, and then we get to these outcomes where it's identified the document, but it's also pulled out some of the key information. And then, you know, you have to think about, so what can I do with that? And once we've got Syntex able to read the documents and able to extract things, we can build processes around it. We can build search tools. So the information isn't just trapped in the document. You know, we invented these formats so that they were portable. We could pass them around. We could put them on storage. We could store them in the cloud, email them. But information does tend to get buried in them. With Syntex, obviously, we get to extract it, surface it at the same level as the document itself, build lots of nice search tools, but also automation. So if we worked out that that invoice is over 50,000, then it needs to be routed through a special process in finance, and it's the AI that's driving all that.
And the cool thing about actually Syntex, as an example, is that you can calculate the return of investment in certain level, because you can kind of analyze your existing process, which could be manual or semi-automatic. And if we apply on this machine learning, we're going to save this amount of money because of the savings of the people spending time on processing things. So funny enough, before I joined Microsoft, I was 5 years working in a company and we did electronic invoice automation. So and that precisely, this is exactly what we used today there. So basically scan an invoice and put it in electronic approval processes, and based on pre-approvals or the amounts of information or what the invoice is all about, it went to a different workflow and then got approved and all of that stuff. But the cool thing was really that you could actually calculate the return of investment. You could say that manual processing of a one invoice takes X amount of time. Doing this automatically takes less. So therefore, return of investment is X and Y. So
that's it. And that's exactly what it's about. That it's that sort of journey and understanding that helps an organization understand that they should invest in something like this. And often it just takes the business case work to drive this out. But there are all sorts of processes where we match documents to each other, sales orders and purchase orders and invoices and statements of work and lots of sort of financial processing. So there are huge opportunities. There's one thing that also gets interesting. So with technologies like Syntex, we can extract bits of information and we can understand them from documents. But obviously, on the other hand, we can also assemble documents with, you know, perhaps in the Microsoft world, we'd use Power Automate or we'd use the graph. And what we'll do is maybe take a template of some kind. We'll maybe generate an invoice or some kind of proposal document, and we'll put the document together and construct it. And maybe that gets sent to a third party or to another organization. If you imagine that on their side, they have something like Syntex and they have AI that can actually understand the document. You know, one thing that I'm wondering about is if in the future, some of the integration that we do as developers, whether actually it changes to be like a document-centric integration, where you have on this side something assembling the document and creating it, perhaps with Power Automate and so on, using the template, it's got the branding, it's human readable, and then something on the other side that's using technology like SharePoint Syntex, it's identifying it as a document of that type, it's extracting the key values, the line items, the invoice reference, the address, the contract number, whatever it might be. You actually have this interchange of machines that isn't like API calls, but it's actually around documents that humans can read. Because the problems with developer integrations is, sure, it's being logged, it's going into a log file somewhere, but the diagnosis isn't quite as easy. You haven't got an artifact that is human readable. It requires technical people to troubleshoot and diagnose. And I could almost imagine in the future, some of these scenarios move over to this document-centric integration where it isn't an API call, it's an auto-generated, an auto-read document by the machines.
Yeah, and also maybe to the point where in your company, there will be AI that will create the file, send it to someone else, and AI on their side will review it. If it doesn't go beyond threshold, it will approve it, sending you back approval where your AI, and it's like no person in the chain. It's like Alexa and Siri talking to each other, like, hey, tell me this. Yeah. Okay, I have five. You want five? I want a three. Okay, negotiate price even.
Exactly. I could certainly imagine things moving in this direction. And, you know, on the surface, you could imagine some some negative impacts from this. But at the same time, all the research suggests that when we automate in this way, it doesn't result in huge numbers of people losing their jobs. The research says that that just doesn't happen, even though naturally you think that it might. Instead, we do focus on to other activities, and we now start to think about what are higher value activities that these people can work on that actually maybe generate more income for the company, or save costs, or improve efficiency, improve well-being even. You know, that's where some of the value of this ultimately comes to.
Absolutely, absolutely. Cool. Let's actually now jump on the articles. So let's do a quick recap on them and discuss them, and then we'll come back on the discussion. Quiet week, actually. So from a Microsoft perspective, due to numerous reasons, actually, it's also the timing. We're now like 2 weeks after the Ignite, so there isn't really big announcement, which we would not have actually told an Ignite as well, which is one discussion point, which we can actually discuss when we get back on the
There is your big discussion. Announcement now on a screen, which wasn't at Ignite.
That was the only big announcement which happened last week. So from Microsoft side, funny enough, in all of the blog posts in Teams blog, in the SharePoint blog, in Microsoft 365 blog, on developer blog, this one was the only news which came out from last week, which is a big one, obviously. It is a SharePoint Framework 112 is out. And it's really targeted for more and more extending Microsoft Teams, but obviously a lot of baseline upgrades on the technology as well. We're looking into having also 1.13, potentially even 1.14 before summer. So it's going to be a pretty busy spring, and all related on Viva connections and a few other things which are happening behind the scenes. But 1.12, big things, a lot of improvements in the team site, web part size changes, preliminary support for Microsoft Teams meeting apps. The reason why this is actually preliminary is that the pre and post meeting apps do work during meeting apps. Whenever the bot is firing the application to be shown, there's a encoding issue which is now being worked on. So that's going to be fixed sooner or later, and after that, it's going to be properly supported. So, and a lot of version updates as well. So that's all good. Now, what else is happening? There was a great new Microsoft Learn module. Is that the right way of saying that, Waldeck?
Correct.
It is. Yeah. You were involved in this, right?
I was.
Yes. So it's getting started in Microsoft Craft Toolkit in Microsoft Learn. It's not a super, super long module, right? So it's relatively, exactly. it's really kind of an introduction on what it is and how to get started, which is actually great. So in 10 minutes, you get an overview, or 20 minutes or 30 minutes, you'll get an overview.
26?
26. Okay. Yes, it says that, actually. Yeah, that's fair. It does say that. You're 100% correct. And good rating, by the way, 4.9. So really good. With 7 surveys. No, never mind. And now, what else is happening? So there was from Microsoft 365 blog, there was actually a few of these additional things, find, do, and discover with Cortana and Microsoft 365. So Cortana is really, there's more and more Cortana automation coming back on the machine learning, artificial intelligence in the business level. So even though Cortana doesn't necessarily have any more direct consumer side devices, it's more and more inside of the Microsoft 365 supporting the business operations. And it's actually really cool. So, well, in certain scenarios, one of the classic examples, though, has been that since like 15 or 12 years ago, and they've been trying to explain that now Cortana can actually, you can use the voice to operate with your email and all of that. And at least for Finnish people, using voice for operation is like, no. And
why would I don't want to talk to my computer
exactly.
I don't know. Like, I can just type so much faster. Like, hey, can you check email? I can check your calendar. No, email. I can. You have no appointments. Like, no. Okay.
Yeah. But there's a lot of actually, I think the daily summary, as an example, in Cortana is really cool. And there's additional things which is now supported and getting more and more supported with Cortana as well. So you can find documents and operations and what's relevant information for you. So really, really cool.
Yeah, also cool the ability internally to mail 3 people and Cortana and have her come up with a right time and place right time to meet, basically.
Yeah. Yes.
Like,
yes.
Find for 3 of us. A half an hour within 2 weeks.
True. Like,
blend.
If you can pronounce the name of a person properly so that Cortana can... No, just kidding.
Just email. Don't talk to her.
This one was a new blog post, Office Add-ins Developer Community February 2021 update. So progress on that side. MVP is actively contributing and a few new samples available. So that's really cool as well. So good progress on there. And then there was a new version of CLI. What's happening here, Valdek?
Correct. The biggest piece is support for upgrading SharePoint Framework projects to SharePoint Framework V1 12, which was released. Right. So we always aim to help people to upgrade projects that they've built in the past to the latest version of SPFX and benefit of the latest updates and features. Often it goes beyond just updating the packages and versions. So we basically do all the work for you, finding out the differences, what needs to be changed, and we're giving you a really comprehensive report, including even a script you can just run. And for three quarters of it, automating the upgrade, and then there might be still a few things you need to change by yourself, but majority of the work is already done.
Yeah.
So that was like the biggest piece of the new version.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you for that. Super helpful for the community. Then Will Holland had a getting started with SharePoint custom views formatting in Microsoft 365 PMP blog, which is the new location where we have the community call recordings, all of the MVPs can post stuff there as well. Then there was a break and change list item permission using PMP.js and SPFX from Shandani. Really cool stuff as well. So walking through the usage on how to get started and on doing the needed operations. Then this is a new series hosted by Louis Fries, and which is around Microsoft 365 PMP Community Spotlight, started with the David Warner and more people coming soon as well. So just a brief intro on who the person is and what's happening and what is the coolest thing. What kind of people we are. I think that there's multiple efforts of this, but these are actually really cool because especially now that everybody works remotely, we don't get to meet face to face. So knowing slightly more about the person is always nice.
Yeah, and also another angle to it is to shed some light behind like who is the person behind particular effort. Because like there are so many things that are a part of the PMP initiative that at times like you might be thinking, is it all Microsoft? Like, no. Like, it's community and it's all people. So even if at times something doesn't work or is wrong, like there is a person at the other side, right? So if you're frustrated, if you're stuck, that's perfectly fine. We get it. But on the other hand, there is human beings who build it, right? So just like to make it clear, like that there are people on the other side who are willing to help, but you also need to help us to help you and just be aware of that it's people there, right? So. Yeah. Be kind and patient, and we will fix anything that needs fixing or whatever together.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, this one is really cool from Nandeep, and then Ravi and Smita related on building Microsoft Teams meeting app with SPFX. So using the 112 and then using a pre-meeting experience to create questions, which are going to be then covered during the meeting. It's a pretty cool scenario, actually. And it's submitted as a sample already in the PMP SPFX web parts gallery, and then most likely a community call demo as well. So really cool stuff from them. This one's really cool, showing JMES path queries for CLI for Microsoft 365.
James.
And so how to make those happen. So a good way of good notes on how to query. Things. And then this one is really cool from Rabia Williams. She's a teammate of you, Waldeck, right? Is that the right way of saying that?
Correct.
Me experience as a bot in Microsoft Teams using a bot composer. So a lot of investments on the Power Platform side and from Azure side, making these things more easier. Well, this is for Azure side, for making things easier for it to be used. So cool stuff and a cool story. And Rabia really goes through step by step what is needed and how to get started and how to do things. So really truly learn how to get started. So really, really cool stuff. From Leon, the Office 365 Management API with Logic Apps and Power Automate. So how do we do that? So that's really cool as well. So kind of a walkthrough on different operations and automation and Power Automate integrations there. Really, really cool stuff. Teams app deployment to Azure web app. So this is a good reminder. It's not just about the development experience. You need to get your stuff actually hosted in production. And this is a good blog post related on that one. So how do you actually then create the Azure web application and host it and deploy the stuff over there? So really cool. And this one had a pretty significantly detailed title, IDX 112.7.29, unable to decode the actually really good. I think Waldeck used it really well. Whenever somebody runs to this exception and they use Google to find it, they will find this blog post, which will then explain exactly what this one was all about. And this really comes back on the assembly references and encoding and decoding inside of them. So, but he walks through the process and how to fix things from that perspective. Then we have Yves Papirchat. Manage site content types with Microsoft Graph. So this is a data endpoint. There's a Graph APIs now for the site content types and how to get started on using them and what's available. So really good post as well. Two YouTube videos. So Paolo had a weekly video creating a bot with a Yo Teams V3. So walking through that process. And then there was another one from Robert's Dev Talk. So SharePoint framework for beginners, a lot of SharePoint framework stuff this week, actually. And so episode 3, anatomy of a web part, and really walks through how does the web part look like? What does it mean? What does it actually contain? What are the different folders and all of that stuff, which is really, really cool additional details on that. And then a final note, and a lot of SharePoint stuff this week as well, because SharePoint 20th birthday party is coming this Saturday, so 27th of March. That's 20 years in SharePoint. And this is basically happening in AltVR space, so a 3D or virtual reality experience. And we actually tested this at some point with the Collab Summit people. I think it was Collab Summit days. That's actually me on the corner. That guy over there is me.
That's me in the corner.
Yes, exactly. But I tested that at some point. I think it was a Collab day or whatever. And it's amazingly efficient. It just an Ignite. So we were testing this as well. It wasn't super widely used, but it actually is a really, really cool experience. So if you have a time, this is on Saturday, next Saturday. And there's a lot of stuff happening. 9 a.m. Pacific time, depending obviously on West time, 4 p.m. London time. So 6 p.m. in Helsinki. So. But a lot of people will be joining from Microsoft as well. So really cool thing to meet other people. And you don't need to have a 3D LVR goggles on your head. That's not needed. So it works through the browser as well. So good. Cool. I think we'll stop this one. And then we have 2 minutes or so, because I know Chris probably have a meeting starting on the hour as well. So what's happening this week? Any last minute thoughts?
For me,
anything interesting?
For me, I am wrapped up in two opportunities for Teams apps. So some interesting scenarios around one for an airport and one for a recruitment company, but so some conversational bot experiences and some other things, something to extend shifts. And also a syntax opportunity with a big sort of architecture and engineering company. So just helping them understand how the technologies can work and envisioning the solution and so on. And also still helping a lot of clients understand the Viva announcements and how to think of them and what Viva Connections means and what they should be doing on the 31st of March. And also a big thing for me this week is ServiceNow go live. Where we're replatforming our entire organization. It's like a massive upgrade. We've got 400 engineers on the platform, 700 clients. It all goes live this weekend, and it's sort of 6 months
weekend.
Of work. Yes, indeed.
Yes. No. But it's this Saturday weekend.
Yeah, exactly. And I am booked at that event. So this could be an interesting weekend all around. Yeah. But hopefully everything goes okay. And we start sort of like a dual running period from Wednesday. And we're in the final stretches. So that's my week.
Oh, cool. Anything, Waldeck, from your side? Anything interesting, quickly?
So I'm working more on Learn, so you can expect more modules in the coming weeks. Two, we will have in a few weeks new event around learning Graph, so we prepare for that, building demos, scripts and whatnot on CLI, and we keep on releasing new features and abilities. Last thing I finished recently was my migrating off from ADAL to MSAL, so that was very interesting exercise. It took us long, but it took us long because MSAL Node has been released just in February or March, right? So it's been like ADA was deprecated already for a long time, I think for a year over now, but MSAL Node shipped just now. So we moved or we are about to move to it. That would be, I guess, in broad strokes that. Yuvesa?
No, SDFS super special. So 113 in the planning, and then app catalog modernization, store modernization work for SharePoint. We're doing a lot of work over there. So gradually rolling out stuff then, and aligning more on teams and all of that stuff. So a lot of stuff there. That's pretty, and MVP Summit preparations. Summit. Yeah, so that's, yeah. So I got to be one of the category leads for whatever reason. Nobody else actually did anything, so it landed on my table. So story of my life. So
that will be my first being non MVP anymore.
Oh, that's true. You're no longer MVP. Oh, that's true. Not. That is true.
Sad days.
Indeed. But thank you, Chris, for joining us. Good discussion and good insights related on partner opportunities and how to keep latest how to keep on track on the latest on the technology always. So really, really enjoyed the chat. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. It's great to speak to you guys. So we need to do this again, seeing as we don't have any in-person conferences. So we need a regular schedule just to make sure we can.
Exactly. That's true. Absolutely. But cool. Thanks, Chris. And thanks everybody for watching and listening, and keep the feedback coming and hashtag BNP Weekly now that we're remembering always saying that. Thank you. Cheers.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thank you.